Movement has the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around, whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself. Shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics. Be the good gifter this year. Shop 30 to 60% off now at Movement.com and enjoy fast and free shipping. That's MVMT.com.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J. Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.
Welcome to a brand new and very, very special episode of the Marigold Standard, your weekly audio source of all things Dream Star Fighting Marigold. I'm your host, Rob Goodwin, and I'm joined as ever by my broadcast colleague, my partner in crime. It is Mr. Matt Turner. Matt Turner, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. It has been a busy, busy day as we're recording this. It is Friday, and Monday, as we said, Monday morning, I am leaving to go to Dallas, Texas for a few days.
Not so Austin. We're trying to get Texas,
not
which I was
Cold
telling
Steve Austin. Yes. I'm going to Dallas for a few days, so we're trying to get as much stuff done as we possibly can. So this way, everybody, whether it's Patreon, whether it's on the free feed, we like to give out a lot of content, folks. So I was jammed. Usually I work a little ahead every day, so my Fridays were easy. Wouldn't have mattered because I had not one meeting, not two meetings, but three meetings. However, Rob, and as you know, I'm a pretty easygoing person. One thing that really bothers me is when I get these last minute meetings, all these meetings I knew about a week in advance. So I was able to plan out my day, do what I needed to do. So that was all fine and well. And again, it's Friday. Tonight is the Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul fight.
Of course.
So I'm super excited to watch that. And it's Christmas beer season. And we have a local brewery around here that's called Trogs. And they do a Christmas beer called Mad Elf. It's only out for about 4 or 5 weeks. It is brewed with your usual Christmas, like cinnamon spices and nutmeg and cherries. And it's a over 11 proof beer. So two of those are my fridge, and I like to have one beer every now and again. So I'm going to drink those beers while I'm watching the fight tonight. So, it was a long day. It was a busy day. It was a great day because I feel much accomplished. Like I said, I literally just got off my last meeting where we found out, very much like the sales meeting last year, we have a musical guest. If you remember last year, we did have Redman and we had members of the Wu-Tang Clan. So we were told there's a musical guest, very much like how it was at the last national sales meeting. And I was like, they wouldn't tell who it was. So I was Texas. Pantera's from Dallas, Texas. From Texas. I was like, and I know it's not going to be. But however, Rob, however, we are a Joshi podcast. Obviously, this is the Marigold Standard. Mm-hmm. Told you I was going to pop you. We won't know until we get there. We're just going to be sitting there, wherever place we're going to be. What would happen? All of a sudden, Double Frontier kicks out. And Tam Nakano and Natsukoi come out as Mel Tier, the special guest at our national sales meeting. I was getting ready to text you this as I'm in my meeting. I'm like, no, I'm podcasting in 20 minutes. I want to tell this on air.
I love that the idea of Meltier coming out and God knows how many sales representatives looking at each other going, what the hell is this? And Matt Turner started a circle pit, a wall of death at the front to tears falling. Is that one falling tears?
Tear tails.
Oh, for God's sake.
Double Frontier. But it's funny, I just went from Pantera to Mel Tier. And then the group text I'm with some of my friends that I work with, I went from Slayer to Pantera, and then I started typing in Mel Tier. I'm like, they have no idea what I'm talking. I'm just gonna cut my losses. This is a really, again, it was a busy day. I got a lot done. It was a really good day. I'm just gonna cut my losses. So again, who knows? Will it be Pantera? Will it be Slayer? Some of these thrash metal bands I like? Probably not, but regardless, it'll be a fun trip.
To be fair, often the three-headed monster of rap is often seen as Wu-Tang Clan, Redman, and Meltier. So, you know, to complete that holy trinity, you do need Meltier there. I am expecting their Rock and Roll of Hall of Fame or, you know, induction very, very sure. Who would play, right? So you know how you get, like, bands that pay tribute to... Who do you think would do a fantastic Tear Tales cover to induct Meltier into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I mean, Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath, obviously. Obviously. And then halfway through, you get Slash.
Absolutely. Pulling out all the big guns.
Because then you would have Slash with the big top hat, and then you would just have, like, the Meltier crown or the veil that now Tam and Sayaka are doing. This could be a whole podcast for anybody. I guess let's just jump off this train. How was your day, buddy? I only talked to you for a little bit today. How's everything going on with you?
Yeah, it's been fine today. Can't complain. Been a relatively quiet day. So, because obviously we were late last night with an open evening. So, got home really quite late. I was knackered last night, absolutely exhausted. But yeah, today's been a fairly relaxed and chilled out day. So yeah, get to come home and talk about the latest interview on the Marigold Standard. Because as you can see, ladies and gentlemen, we've been very lucky to secure another exclusive Marigold interview, which, you know, we've been blessed that we've been able to interview Mirai. We've been able to interview Sonny Gutierrez. That was a great podcast. We are having Sonny back on hopefully partway through December to do a sort of a two-part podcast where we're going to talk about the year, the Marigold year that has been. And we're also going to do a load of top fives as well, you know, guitarists and sequel movies and all sorts. So that's coming out as well. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago, we released our Natsumi Shozuki interview as well. And we have now managed to secure none other than the Red Queen herself, Utami Hayashishita. Really excited to go through these answers, Matt, because there are some real, real nuggets in this transcript.
Yeah, this was a real good one. Obviously, once we got the okay to start doing interviews for Marigold, we were like, Utami. We're like, let's hold off a little bit. Mm-hmm. Let's wait to after the EO match so we can ask that. So I think we might be one of the first podcasts or blogs, if you will, to talk about the Utami match. So this one we kind of held off. We wanted to start with Mirai because when we even said it, when we reviewed the very first show, the very first Marigold show in Cork and Hall, where it was just like, she just came out so refreshed and got one of the biggest reactions she's ever had in Cork and Hall. So that was a really good one. Obviously the Natsumi Shozuki was a good one. We have another one in the pipeline as well. We'll release that between now and sometime, probably the end of the year, with the other 5,000 podcasts we have going on. We may even throw in the Stardom Cast Marigold Standard holiday special. We might have a little Christmas party, just for the heck of it.
Absolutely. Why not?
Why not, buddy? So, this was a really, really good one, my friend. And I'm super excited to do this one. And you can see it's already getting dark. So I'm going to put a light on here so it doesn't look like that I'm about ready to fall asleep. So continue, good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll try and get that. Obviously, dependent on when we get the answers for the interview. Hopefully, I would like to drop that around the time of First Dream. Because I think that'll be a nice tie-in. To be able to interview Utami, who obviously is a massive, massive favorite of both mine and Matt's, is really, really a dream come true. A first dream come true, if you will.
A quick lead-in before we go into this, I had the privilege of meeting Utami a little over a year ago at GCW. It was super, super nice. I was even cut a little promo where I literally put on all of our stations and I said right there, she is my pick to win last year's 5-star Grand Prix. And that might have jinxed it.
Yes. Yeah. She didn't even make it through the tournament. She was one of the 15,000 injuries that Stardom had last year during the 5-star.
And the reason why I bring that up, partner, is because I'm looking at your background and I was able to get Rob's book signed by Utami.
Indeed, Hayashi,
just so I see it in his background. And then if you take a look right over here, there's my picture with Utami. And then on the bottom corner is a little Aphrodite thing that my daughter did that I've shown before that Utami signed. She said, you need to get Sai Kamatani to sign this. Unfortunately, couldn't get her to sign. They had their own things that they were signing at WrestleCon this year. So maybe another story for another time, another bite at the apple. Well, we shall see. But I was able to meet Utami last year. Super, super nice. And now we get an interview. So full circle, my man. Who knows what next year will bring to us?
Absolutely. And I know that people who've met Utami have said her English is actually really quite good. So hopefully, maybe one day, and obviously with Marigold having already announced that they will be in Las Vegas during WrestleMania week, maybe we'll get to do a part two Electric Boogaloo of this interview. But what the way we're going to do this is the way we've done the Mirai interview and the Natsumi Shozuki interview. So the full transcript is available at talkjoshi.com. It has officially changed now. It is officially talkjoshi.com. The full transcript will be available on the website by the time you are watching or listening to this. And then we're going to do a little podcast companion to this as well, where we sort of break down Utami's answers to the questions that we asked, maybe just have a little chat about certain things. I know there's certainly one thing that I want to talk about a little bit later on in the transcript. But without further ado, let's dive into this. So the first question that we asked Utami, and it's the one that we sort of start every interview that we do, especially if it's the first time that we've interviewed them. And it's just a very simple, can you talk a little bit about your personal start in professional wrestling? And Utami's answer was, I was a wrestling fan and I loved it. It all started because I wanted to be someone special like a wrestler. And again, you compare this to Natsumi Shozuki, who was actually cast as a wrestler in a play and went to go and watch a Stardom show as research for that role. And then you look at Mirai, obviously, who was inspired during the charity show after the dreadful tsunami. It's really interesting looking at different wrestlers' starts in wrestling. And I think Utami's, of the three that we've done, I would argue that Utami's is the more conventional one of the three, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I fell in love with wrestling at a very, very young age. And then I kind of was, I was 13 or 14 years old. I was like, maybe I want to give this a try. So you do have a lot of people that, you know, just about anything, you want to become a baseball player, you know, it's because you're a baseball fan, you know, football player, soccer player. So this is the more conventional one. And considering the fact she was kind of in the public spotlight, at a young age, because I believe her dad was a famous TV star by the name of Big Daddy. Not the Big Daddy that wrestles, that used to wrestle over in your neck of the woods,
very
buddy.
Different, but, Big Daddy, yes. Very, very different, yeah.
And you never really hear her talk about that. That's something that you have to do like research on. She never talks about that. It's almost like a separate part of her life. But you can tell from literally from day one when she had her debut match in 2018 against Jungle Kiona that she was able, you know, her and the camera, they get along really, really well. And here it is some 5 years later and 6 years later, excuse me. And yeah, she's one of the top stars in all of wrestling.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting when she says, I wanted to be someone special like a wrestler, you know, almost wanting to stand out. Obviously, I know that there was a rather large family there. I think it was a reality TV show. And I know that Utami obviously made a couple of appearances on there. So, you know, your natural thing is obviously the more siblings that you have, I think the natural thing is to want to do something to stand out from them. And I wonder how much of Utami saying she wanted to be someone special, wanted somebody that stood out. I wonder how much that had to do with it. Obviously, I've only got one brother, and he's better than me in every single facet. So I don't know what that's like.
I think you're a better podcaster than he is, buddy. And you're a better friend to me, if that's worth anything.
Thank you so much. See, it's stuff like this. This is why I need that Matt Turner positivity. Next question then. So we asked, whilst in Stardom, you achieved almost every accomplishment there was to achieve, from winning the World of Stardom Championship to winning the 5-Star Grand Prix and wrestling in Nippon Budokan. What are some of your own personal highlights from your time in Stardom? And Utami says, the World of Stardom defense against Tsuri lasted a total of more than 40 minutes. That match was recognized worldwide, and I'm happy about that. Also, there was a time when I was a quadruple champion. The many title defenses were tough, but they are a treasure to me. Actually, recently on the alternate commentary, which has come out today on the Patreon as this has come out, we were talking about just how many belts Utami had at that point, because I believe she was a goddess champion. She was the future champion. She was the SWA champion. She was also the EVE International champion as well. So quite the gold haul for Utami. And this was just 6 months, I think, or something after she debuted as well. She debuted in the August and the match we watched was in February. So quite an impressive haul. But I can't say I'm surprised at all that the World of Stardom Championship defense against Tsuri is on there, Matt.
Yeah, and just to quickly go back to that alternate commentary that we did, I think because Momo Watanabe was the leader of Queen's Quest, she should have ribbed her and made her carry the flag.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything. Also, here's my robe. Carry my robe.
Here you go, kid. But yeah, I mean, that's, again, when you're only a few months into your career and you're basically almost like the great Sasuke carrying all those belts, that's really cool. And we've seen wrestlers in Stardom, you know, had one belt, two belts, three belts, but for her to have four and in different promotions early on in her career, that really said something. Like, this Utami Hayashista, she's going to make it. She's going to be something special. She had a heck of a year in her first year. You know, here it is talking about the quadruple championships, her first 5-Star Grand Prix. She goes to the finals against Mayu Iwatani. Didn't win it, but still goes to the finals in your first 5-Star to go up against, you know, the GOAT, in my opinion, in Mayu. And then that match with Tsuri. I mean, and we've, you know, partner, that we've had a lot of new listeners and watchers, or a lot of new listeners to the podcast and a lot of new watchers to Stardom over the last 12, 18 months. And this, whenever they say, what's a match that you would show that if you don't know too much about the competitors prior, it's this one against Tsuri. Because this is one, again, Andy Hedder, kind of the unofficial third man on the podcast. This is his favorite Stardom match. He absolutely loves this match. And it's just, it's a war of attrition. You know, it's just about who's better, who wants it more. And it's the only match in Stardom history that I know of that when it goes to the time limit draw, at least championship match, that they restart it because it was that good. And then you're kind of like, well, how do you get out of this again? You go, usually we see matches back here. And I've been in matches where it goes to the time limit draw. We're going to restart it. We'll go to 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then we'll go to a draw again. They go to a draw again, but they do it by double knockout. So it's two different finishes, which I think is just absolutely genius. And it's the, you know, take it for what it's worth with Dave Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer. It's the highest rated women's match in the history of the Wrestling Observer. To me, that counts for something.
Absolutely.
And again, it's a match that everybody to this day still talks about. And I know when you get asked and when I get asked, what's, you know, three or four matches to start somebody off in stardom, this is it right here. This is it right here, because it's a masterpiece at pure pro wrestling. Why I always say it's the greatest sport on God's green earth.
Yeah, the match itself is always going to be, from a fan perspective, one of the highlights of Utami's career, because you can argue that that was the moment. Well, you don't even need to argue. It was the moment her red belt reign was cemented. You know, that was the moment you were like, right, okay, you know, we'd seen her be shunted down the card at Budokan, where she wasn't in the main event. We'd seen her shunted down the card in favor of the Goddess of Stardom Championships in Yokohama in the April. And then to come out here with a little bit of a chip on her shoulder and deliver this absolute barn burner against Siori, who was obviously, you know, fighting for her own reasons with her late mother as well. To then go out, have a 40-minute match, you know, with the time limit draw and then the additional time, which in itself, you're absolutely right, to my knowledge, certainly the World of Stardom Championship, we've never had a match like that. And I remember when we did the podcast that covered that, me and Chris got into quite a heated debate, because he argued that it could set a dangerous precedent for other time limit draws, because this match went to overtime and, you know, what's to stop the next time limit draw wanting overtime as well? And my argument was that this was such a unique match, such a unique atmosphere. There's so much emotion running through it that even the ordinarily stoic Rossi Ogawa, you know, was caught up in the wave of emotion and was like, yeah, actually, we need to keep this going. And since then, obviously, we haven't had anything like that. So this stands as that unique match, not only because it was rated 5.5 stars by the Wrestling Observer, not only because, you know, it was spoken about by everyone from Dave Meltzer all the way through to ESPN, to podcasts that never cover stardom, like Going in Raw by Stephen Larson, which is a great podcast and is one of the main reasons that I wanted to become a wrestling podcaster. But, you know, even they were talking about this match. So it was a match that put stardom on a lot of people's radar. And, you know, there was loads of statistics about Stardom World subscriptions going up following this match. So it's nice to see that even though, you know, it had a lot of ramifications for Stardom worldwide, it also resonated for Utami. And it's nice to know that she knows how much that match, how important that match was. I also really like, though, on the flip side of that, that early in her career, even though you could argue that, you know, the Future of Stardom Championship was in its infancy, I believe Utami was the second champion after Starlight Kid, you know, the SWA Championship as well, you know, think of it what you will. I know it's got a very divisive rule set, and obviously towards the end it was sort of seen as basically surplus to requirements, but it's nice to see that Utami was at a place 6 months into her career where she was like, I am damn good at this wrestling thing. Four belts, 6 months into my career, I am damn good at this. And the fact that she's still looking back on that time now, not having taken it for granted, that for me really speaks to just the kind of person that Utami is.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. There's actually, and to kind of piggyback off this whole Utami versus Siori match, there's actually a clip that's on YouTube. I just saw it about 5 or 6 months ago, that after Siori had this 40-plus minute war, Utami had this 40 plus minute war with Siori, because it's the Cinderella final show. Mm-hmm. She is going to the back and Saya Kamatani's coming in with the dress, and they kind of just have this moment, because again, they're part of Queen's Quest and they're part of Aphrodite. They're like, wow, you look great. And then, you know, it's just like, you had a great match, okay, see you later. Like, it's this really, really cool moment between Aphrodite that who knows if and when we'll ever see again, just because of obviously Saya Kamatani, the heel turn, staying in Stardom, and Utami and Marigold. So I just remembered, as much as I've seen, you know, Siori versus Utami, this 40-minute, you know, plus match, that it was only a few months ago that I saw it on YouTube, where they kind of were crossing paths as Saya was, you know, going to do the whole big Cinderella ceremony. And Utami's just like, Paul Exhausted. You look great. You had a great match. Like, it was just a really cool moment between the two.
I do like the fact that Utami was like, oh, you look amazing. And Saya's like, you had a great match. Pouring with sweat. But yeah, it will forever be one of those iconic Stardom matches. And to be a part of that and to be the champion going into that, I imagine will be something that stays with her forever, hopefully. The next question we asked was, obviously we're looking at Marigold now. Question, you are obviously now a part of this exciting new adventure called Marigold, choosing to follow Rossi Ogawa. Can you tell us about your thought process and how hard it was to leave Stardom? Got hiccups, I'm sorry. And Utami says, I didn't have any doubts. I had already decided to go when I heard rumors about the new group. However, I was born in Stardom, so I felt lonely leaving. It felt like leaving my family that I had been with for so long. And this was another interesting answer for me, because when we asked Mirai that question, Mirai was very much of the sort of, I knew I had to go. It was in my mind, I had to go. And there wasn't really any thought to, you know, how she felt about Stardom. It was just a case of, I knew I had to go. It was sort of my destiny, if you like. And when we asked Natsumi Shozuki, she was of a very similar opinion. You know, I just felt like I had to go. It was a difficult decision. I was the ActRes Girls singles champion at the time. I had to go. And this is the first time where actually, especially one of the Stardom wrestlers has talked about how they felt leaving the promotion. You know, I felt like I was leaving my family. And this sort of leads into the next question that we're going to ask in a moment. But she's also the first one to say, as soon as I heard that we were starting a new group, I was there. I wanted to go. And I think it was the Observer that reported that there was a lot of negativity before the Marigold split. And, you know, even if Dave Meltzer didn't report it, it's not exactly something that was well hidden. And it's interesting that Utami was dead set on leaving as soon as this new promotion, this new venture from Rossi. She was dead set on going, and she wanted to be a part of this brand new thing. It is quite a difficult decision, because she does sort of acknowledge that, you know, yes, I knew I needed to go. Yes, I wanted to go. I was the first one to say I was going, you know, and then, but I did. I am going to miss, you know, my family, the family that is Stardom. So it must have been a really difficult sort of period, especially knowing she was leaving and then having to wrestle with these people that she knew she'd be leaving, Matt.
And we talked about this so much on the Stardom cast. She went about this, her leaving, old school, did business in the right way. You know, from what we understand is she basically told everybody, in December, January, I'm not renewing my contract. You know, I know I'm going to do all the dates. Basically told all the wrestlers, told all the management. Obviously, her and Saya Kamatani as Aphrodite were the tag champs. We knew they would be dropping them, which they eventually did too in a fantastic match against Crazy Star, Mei Sara, and Suzu Suzuki. But she went about business the right way. She didn't phone anything in. Again, that match with Mike at the Cinderella Finals, it's a match of the year contender.
Fantastic.
So good. It's a match that doesn't get enough love because of just how, we had so many great matches, not just in Stardom, not just in Marigold, but in all of wrestling. There's been so many great matches, but it was an epic match. And Utami went out there and gave Micah probably one of her best performances ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, Micah's great, but she literally took Micah from here to here in that performance and was just like, no, I'm going to make sure that you deserve, we're showing you, but you're the red belt champion. She went out, she did business. She put everybody over from Micah to Saida. I mean, when she put them over, she put them over properly in the ring and then put them over afterwards. And then there was that emotional when they had the final Queen's Quest, I think it was like a 10 man or 12 man tag that like, it was very emotional in the ring. Everybody was crying, including Saya Kamatani. I know Matt, Saya Kamatani cries a lot. Yeah, I know. But it was very emotional.
Saya Kamatani cries when a shoe comes undone, Matt.
They're used there. But and you look at this last sentence. I felt very lonely leaving. It felt like I was leaving with my family that I was been with for so long, and you can see that. But again, it's just, we see people leaving promotions all the time, and it's just the fact that she knew she was going 4 or 5 months in advance and did business the right way, and it helped everybody out. Saeeda got the rub. Mm-hmm. Micah got a huge championship rub. I mean, it really gave all these wrestlers to put them in a higher pedestal, because we've been saying for the past three years that I've been on the podcast that the pillars in Stardom at that time were Mayu, Shuri, Utami, and Julia. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if one of your, well, two of them wind up leaving, but Utami here is one of the big pillars. You know, she's had, out of all the names that I mentioned, she's had the longest, as far as per day goes, championship run. Between all those great wrestlers I just mentioned, she went about business the right way. And again, I've seen, you know, people leaving to go to different companies, and you can just say, well, you know, okay, it's business. I have to put somebody over, and they do it in a lazy way, or they don't make sure that they look good. No. And Utami is like probably one of the best examples I've ever seen of anybody like leaving, giving the notice, and making sure that they do business and they do business right. So you can just tell how much that she loves Stardom and still loves Stardom. So, I thought that was great. Just shows you what a great professional and person that Utami is. But at the same time, I mean, we know that she is the ace of Marigold and somebody they're going to hang their hat on for a long time, and rightfully so.
It's important to note that, you know, yes, she might not, you know, she might not like the promotion, you know, as she left. You know, there's going to have been reasons why she left, but she still respects the promotion. She still has great memories of the promotion, you know. So that's the line as well, isn't it? So, you know, it's all very well saying, oh, the people that left Marigold hate Stardom. No, that's not the case. You know, they might dislike certain directions, they might dislike certain aspects of it, but they will always have that respect. And for Utami, who got her start in Stardom, who, you know, became a star in Stardom, it's nice to see that she did, you know, she does still have that respect for the company. And going back to that Micah match, it's one of those fantastic matches that I completely forgot happened this year. It so much has gone on in this year that I thought it was 2023 and not 2024. So that's wild. It really, really is.
I think it's in my top 10 favorite matches I've seen this year thus far, because we keep dream booking Dream Queendom. So.
We do, yeah, that's true. I would be amazed if it doesn't get a lot of votes in the Stardom Cast Awards. This one really made me laugh. When we asked her, how did the other members of Queen's Quest react to your decision? Utami's reaction was, everyone felt lonely. Saya in particular. I think we could have all guessed that Saya Kamatani was going to be the one that took this the hardest. In particular, told me she didn't want me to leave, but in the end, everyone supported my decision. And that's true friendship. You know, of course they don't want Utami to leave. You know, Azumi and Saya, for especially, have been with her since the start. So of course they're not going to want her to leave, but, you know, there's still that support there. We don't want you to leave, but we appreciate that you need to go and spread your wings, and, you know, you're on another path. And obviously, you know, I think we knew, both in a comical side, because, you know, Saya cries everything, but, you know, on a more serious note, Saya was arguably the closest to Utami. They were tag champs, they were a tag team, you know, one of the best tag teams in Stardom, in Aphrodite. They sort of came up together throughout 2019. So it does not surprise me that Saya was the one that took this the hardest, and it's nice to see that she still had the full support of Queen's Quest as well.
Yeah, I was totally shocked by this answer.
Expected again, Lady C to just be in bits.
She was a mess. She couldn't take it. No, again, it's just so sweet with Utami and Saya. It really, really is. And again, anybody that knows me knows how much I love Queen's Quest, especially these two. And, you know, you just made mention, partner, a few seconds ago, how great they were as a team. Don't forget, they had two really great singles matches for Utami's World of Stardom Championship back at Nippon Budokan Hall at All-Star Dream Cinderella. Mm-hmm. And then the next year on night one of World Climax for Saya Kamatani's Wonder Stardom Championship. And that's one of the many great things we see about Stardom and just really Joshi in general. It's one thing when you're good as a team. It's another thing when you're good as opponents, or vice versa. You know, we saw that with Miko Anno and Atsumi Shozuki, which obviously we'll be talking about that later on this week, because we know they were a great tag team. They made it to the finals of the Twin Star Tag Team Tournament, and they just put on an absolute belter
belter and banger.
Yes. Not to be confused with Meltier. Anywho, getting back on track. But now you kind of figure that everybody would have been upset. But yeah, her and Saya were definitely the closest, because what a fantastic team that they were. And for you Patreon folks, Maybe or may not. I may have fantasy booked them into our EO and Kyrie thing. You'll have to stay tuned for that.
There you go. Talk about a shill. Talk about a salesman. Moving on to Utami's achievements in Marigold. Congratulations on winning the first ever Dreamstar Grand Prix. It's something you will always be remembered for, just like Masahiro Chono and the G1 Climax. What does this accomplishment mean to you? And Utami says, for me, this was my first big achievement since joining the new organization. I'm very happy about that. More than anything, I feel very honored to have made my mark at the beginning of the history of an organization. And that's, you know, obviously Marigold are in the very infancy of their existence. You know, there are going to be a lot of firsts in Marigold. She wasn't the first Marigold world champion, wasn't even in the picture. It was, you know, Sari and Julia. But to have this opportunity to forever be sort of mentioned as the first winner of this tournament, and to arguably say that, you know, aside from wrestling Io Sky, you know, which was a phenomenal match, Marigold's match of the year, I would argue, you know, you could argue that maybe considering she's, you know, the ace around which this company is going to be built, should we have done more with her? And actually, this slow build for Utami throughout this has helped to elevate your likes of Miku Aono, your likes of Koki Amore, Natsumi Shozuki. And now, when we are on the path to First Dream, it looks like we are about to enter the age of the Red Queen. The Red Queen cometh, as the title of the podcast says. But yeah, it's a very well-deserved achievement, certainly. And to be honest, there was only ever one person that made sense to win this tournament, and that was Utami.
Yeah, I think majority of people had Utami pegged and predicted to win this tournament. And it's the right thing. It's a simple business. It makes sense. And then kind of build her up towards the Sari match, which we're going to see at First Dream on the 3rd of January, which I'm so excited to see that match. And I know me and you, partner, our early prediction is that Utami's going to take that belt and we're going to have a long run with it, rightfully so, because that's just who you want to be building the promotion on, because Utami's fantastic and she knows how to get other talent over, even if she's the one that's getting her hand raised at the end, which is a very hard and special thing to do that Utami does, maybe better than anybody in wrestling. I mean, it really is a gift. She's just so talented. But yeah, she'll be always remembered for to be the first winner of this tournament and be the first Joshi to win the big tournaments in Stardom and Marigold. You know, no matter who comes and goes over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years in Marigold and Stardom, she'll always be known as the first one to win both tournaments, which you really don't see too much in Japan. I mean, it took a long time before you would finally see somebody win the IWGP and the All Japan, because back in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, those were the big promotions. So, and it's a little more commonplace now, but in Joshi, you really don't see it. And she'll always be remembered. Etched in stone, you can make an easy argument that when it comes to Joshi tournament wrestling, she's the greatest ever. And she's still very much in her prime with a lot more years in front of her as well. Because, again, not only did she win the 5-star, and not only did she win the Dream Star, she made it to the finals of the 2018 5-star Grand Prix, which is coming in second place in your rookie year. That's a heck of an accomplishment. But yeah, Utami, just what a phenomenal tournament wrestler.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Moving on then, we then said, in the Dreamstar Grand Prix, we saw you have great singles matches with the likes of Koki Amore, Victoria Yuzuki, and Mirai. Who else in Marigold would you like to face in a singles match that you haven't already? And I thought this was a really, really, really good answer because this match would be phenomenal. Utami says, among those who I have no experience with in singles, Matsui is interesting. I don't have that speed, and I'd like to face her in a singles match. The speed of Misa Matsui versus the power of Utami. I mean, straight away, it's got similarities to that fantastic Corican Hall 5-star match, Utami versus Izumi. And yes, Utami might not have the speed of Misa Matsui, who is phenomenal in her own right. And I can't wait for her to get that well-deserved Superfly Championship. But the speed of her and having that base, that power base that Utami has, who is deceptively quick, by the way. Yes, she has the power. Yes, she has the muscle. And yes, she's got the big star aura. But she's also deceptively quick as well. That match would absolutely rock. Can you imagine next year, Dreamstar Grand Prix, giving that 10, 11, 12 minutes and just having it balls to the wall for 12 minutes? I would be so, so happy with that. And I'm glad as well that she's put over one of the Actress girls, because she could have, you know, said, I know I've faced them already, but my Sakurai, Mirai, you know, I'd like to face Kazuna Tanaka, but I'm really glad that she's picked someone who sometimes gets overlooked in Misa Matsui and who is so damn good. And we said during the Dreamstar that Misa, you know, was always in the first, second, or third match on the card. It was very rare she was in the upper or the main card. The main event. And she would always be a solid, solid hand and would always have a really good match with whoever she was put in the ring with. So when she does eventually get this match with Utami, I expect it to be fantastic.
You literally read in my mind, partner, again, half a world away. When we got these questions back and I read that, I think it was a day or two later, I went back to that matchup in Corican Hall from last year's 5-star Grand Prix. And that was absolutely fantastic. Just terrific stuff between the two. So excellent stuff. And I know they had won the 2022 5-star Grand Prix with Izumi and Utami. So again, another great thing with Utami, she can work any style. You know, obviously her matches definitely with Shuri and her matches with Micah and Himeka, those are probably like her best bouts because they have the same style, that hard-hitting, right-in-your-face style. We may mention the two Sai Kamatani matches. They have different styles, great matches. The match with Izumi, terrific, terrific match. Misa Matsui and Utami, I'm all for that, absolutely. You know, whether it's in the Dreamstar or whether it's for Utami's, fingers crossed, he does get that red belt win at the beginning of next year. You know, do that in Corican Hall. But yeah, Misa Matsui's one we talk all, we sing her praises all the time, every week on the Marigold Standard podcast when we're reviewing the shows. But Tommy versus Misa Matsui in 4 or 5 months, that's sign me up, good sir. Sign me up.
Yeah, Utami's an incredibly versatile wrestler. We've seen her be an absolute killer. You know, you look at that World of Stardom Championship match against Mayu, for example, where she was just on the offense all match, and she was so relentlessly focused on targeting Mayu's neck. And then you look at her match with Shuri, where she dropped the belt at Dream Queendom, and just the storytelling that she's able to do, the defensive selling work that she's able to do, especially as she's having that knee absolutely brutalized by Shuri and the White Tiger. So, you know, and then you look at her matches with Izumi, which are a completely different style again. And she's excelled in all three of those styles of matches. So I imagine this with Matsui would be incredible. When we get it, I don't know. I hope it's a match that means something and it's not just a random singles match. I know that the main one of the main drawbacks at the moment with Marigold is they have quite a small roster. So obviously, you know, to fill out cards, you are putting on matches that you wouldn't necessarily put on before. Obviously, we saw the debut of three, or the introduction of three rookies at Corican Hall. So we're going to have even more people on the roster. We've seen Naho Yamada make her debut. We've seen Hummingbird make her debut. Minami Yuki is being on more cards. So it's going to be less and less of an issue as the promotion moves forward. And hopefully when they do eventually face Misa and Utami, it is a match that means something, you know, whether it is a title match or whether it is in the Dream Star, hopefully there are stakes attached to it. Moving on, this is one of your questions, Matt. What is it like training in the Marigold Dojo? And Utami says, we often start from the basics. The image is that the people who gather start from the basics again. Then we do technical things that step up from there. And we've seen that actually with, so for example, Naho Yamada, who had already wrestled, I think it was 50 matches for Ice Ribbon. And then was sort of made to go back through the process again in the Marigold Dojo before she then passed her protest. And obviously we've seen her debut since. So it's interesting to see the difference between what is expected in certain different Joshi promotions, isn't it?
I always like asking this question because, you know, again, I trained at the Ring of Honor Dojo, Watch Your Feet, under CM Punk with a lot of seasoning from Samoa Joe. And we were pretty much told from day one, because Punk would be texting with Rocky Romero, who was doing a lot of training in the New Japan Dojo, both the LA and Tokyo. And he's like, this is how I want to run my dojo, the Japanese style. So it was a lot of squats. It was a lot of running. It was a lot of cardio. It was the Gotch Bible. If you don't know what that is, look it up. And if you still want to know more, you guys know how to get a hold of me. I'm very easy to get a hold of. I still to this day do the Gotch Bible at least once a week, some 20 years later. So, and then I go to some, there's some schools that like I'll be like a guest trainer at, and I'll ask them what their training is. I'm like, you guys had it so easy. You guys had it so easy. So anytime I get to talk to somebody that is trained or is training in a Japanese style dojo, I'm like, oh, tell me what it's like, because this is what I had to do, and it's very similar. And what she said here, start off with the basics. That's what it was with us. And when we have Shane Hagedorn on to promote his book that he's writing on Ring of Honor, we'll talk a little more in depth detail that I think it was something like 3 or 4 months in training before we were allowed to even touch the ring. I mean, we weren't even allowed to put our feet on the ring to like stretch our legs. It was all cardio, and it was all, then once we passed that part, then it was in the rings and it was all basics. It was the lockups. Again, you know, I like a good lockup, because how much the lockup was drilled into me, a headlock, stuff like that, the headlock takeover, it was constant drilling of the basics. You know what I mean? It's always a headlock before head scissors. You know, it's really cool to do the flashy moves, but if you don't understand the basics, you don't have anything behind it. It's not meaning anything. So I like that. And you can see it from these rookies that they know the basics very, very well. You look at the Kazuna Tanaka. You look at Kamaru Manami. You look at all these great wrestlers, even Myla Grace, who I know has wrestled before. But you can tell that she's in the Marigold Dojo polishing up her basics, because she's doing really well with all that stuff. So, you know, I always love asking questions that people training in these old school style dojos. What's your training like? But yeah, right there, basics, and then you're building yourself up. You're having the building blocks, which is a cheap plug for Rob's new book coming out sometime in the next 2 years.
In the next 5 at the bloody rate it's going. But yes, thank you very much for the plug there, my friend. Question then, we had to ask about it, didn't we? You were Io Shirai's first match in Japan in 5 years. What was it like to be in the ring with someone who means so much to you? And Utami says, I was happy to be able to meet someone I've admired since I was a fan. I was nervous and anxious at the same time. The 2 weeks from before the match were a busy time for my brain with all sorts of emotions. Now, I must admit, one of my favorite moments from Marigold in this first year isn't a match, it isn't a promo, it isn't a press conference. It is the reaction of Utami Hayashishita when Io Sky comes on the video screen and basically says, I want a match, and I want a match with you. Because that organic reaction, you can't fake. You know, it's one of the most beautifully pure moments that you're going to ever see. And I know that obviously it was announced afterwards that Utami had absolutely no idea this was going to happen. And it was sort of sprung on him because they knew how much Io meant to her. That, it's perfect. It really, really was just perfect. And that for me, when we potentially do Marigold Standard Awards, you know, or the Marigold Standard Bearers, I don't know what we'll call it.
We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out. My moment of the year for Marigold with our diet is that moment. Not only because Io Shirai was coming back, or Io Sky was coming back to Japan to wrestle for the first time in 5 years against Utami, and we knew it was going to be a great match, but that organic reaction. And that'll be something that I'm sure stays with Utami forever as well.
Yeah, and one of the great things about that whole thing is Io, or that match, was Utami and Nanae, and one of the best wrestling matches you'll see in Corrigan Hall in any promotion all year.
Yeah, that Passion Injection match was really good.
The whole psychology behind it is you take the crowd here, because you had a really good show, so you're building. You have an epic Corrigan Hall-worthy main event between these two former World of Stardom champions, and then it's just like, where do you go from here? Oh, we're going to bring Io, like the Joshi queen of this building. We're going to put her on the wall, and we're going to get Utami's general reaction. And again, just what a great person Utami is. You get that. You just feel so happy for her. And then you're happy you're getting the match, and you're happy you just saw this great match with her and Nanae. It's just like, you're all sorts of joy. It's just like, you know, Christmas comes early or late, depending on how you look at things. But
depending on your outlook on life, I suppose.
Yeah, there it is. I think it was announced early on in the year. But anywho, so that was great. And you can even see I went back and watched the Utami Io match maybe about 2 months ago. And you can see early on, like, Utami's like not Utami. Like, she's just almost like starstruck. She's like has to catch her breath. I think Io like puts her in a headlock, kind of calms her down. And then once you get to the point, because once it gets, then it's just straight Utami, where they're doing the German suplex off the top rope. She's taking a top rope poison round, because why not? And then it gets to, in my opinion, the best Marigold match in their short history.
Absolutely.
And what a great moment. Just absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal match. And just the definition of a dream match that clearly delivered. So, yeah, you can just tell that how much that meant to Utami, not only just from this answer, but as you mentioned, partner, her reaction in Corrigan Hall when she was getting the match, and then it just seemed like the first few minutes of the match, it seems like Utami's almost like starstruck. It's almost like she has like what MMA fighters call adrenaline dump. And there's a point in the match where like Io slows it down, like grabs her headlock, and she might have said like, "Let's just have some fun." And then from that moment on, it's peak Utami, the Utami that we love. And that just the match that Io is just like, you get done watching it. I think me and you watched the show live. I think we're texting each other and we're like, Io is so good. We didn't realize that she actually kind of had to slow her style down so the wrestlers in NXT and WWE, she can kind of keep up with her. And then it's her first match back in Japan doing the Joshi style. And it's just like she picked up like it was as if it was her Momo Watanabe 2018 again. It's like, that's how good Io is. And Io, in my opinion, is having the best year she's had in 5 or 6 years between this match. And then she's allowed to be a little more Io on WWE TV, and Io is a big star, and arguably maybe, you know, I mean, she's obviously still going and still doing great stuff, but maybe the best Japanese wrestler to come over to the big scene, maybe ever. You know, Muda's up there, Nakamura, they kind of fumble the ball with Asuka, they did well with from time to time, but when it's all said and done, we talk about who's the greatest wrestlers to go from Japan to the big stage over here in the States. It could be Io. And the fact that in the midst of this run, she wrestles Utami on this show. I mean, it's just, it really is a dream. It really is. It really is a dream, my man.
Absolutely. Moving on then, we asked, you've said over the past few months that Io and Venny were your dream matches. Having now faced both of them, is there anybody else that you have your eye on? And I love this answer, and you'll see why in a moment. Utami says, I've always been interested in Rina Yamashita. I'm really drawn to her coolness. I can completely see that. Rina Yamashita is the... If you look up badass in the dictionary, there's just a picture of Rina Yamashita. And it says, also Jungle Kiona. She was my debut opponent. I think she's my eternal rival. I definitely want to meet her again in the ring, and I think she's someone I have to meet. Rossi, we've been very good this year. If you are able to bring Jungle Kiona back into wrestling, even if it's only for a one-off against Utami, I would be a very, very, very happy man, because she's such a great, underrated wrestler. You know, she will always, you know, in Stardom be someone who never achieved the white belt, never achieved the red belt, you know, never quite got the singles push she deserved, and yet she's so phenomenal in ring, and she's so intrinsically linked to Utami. You know, debut opponent, had that feud with Queen's Quest where she just couldn't seem to get one over on Utami for the longest time, and I feel like because of outside factors, let's call it. We never really got a definitive end to that feud. And then obviously Jungle went out. She got injured once she'd left Stardom, seemingly stepped away from wrestling. I mean, obviously, most importantly, we hope that Jungle is doing well. But she's teased little bits on social media that she misses wrestling. It was her idea to bring in the GHC Women's Championship. We now have a GHC Women's Championship. Again, and we've said this before, you know, wrestlers' happiness and wrestlers' health is paramount. If she's healthy, if she's happy, if she's able to, a match, Utami Hayashishita versus Jungle Kiona, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, partner, you did make mention, she's been talking quite a bit on social media about wrestling, where either lately, the past few months, she's been either quiet or she's a firefighter, something like that.
So
we've been seeing some of that, which is really cool. And she really hasn't been tweeting too much about wrestling. Yeah, in the past month or so, it's kind of ramped up a little bit. So it's And then you take this with this answer, and we all know that she had a great relationship and probably still does have a great relationship with Rossi. Jungle Kiona will be a great added addition to this roster, not only from an in-ring aspect, but a behind the scenes as a trainer or somebody that the younger wrestlers, which we know Marigold has a lot of rookies coming in, they can pick her brain or she can watch a match and help them out with certain things. So I think bringing Jungle Kiona back, whether it's on a full-time basis or a part-time basis, and whether it's in the ring or helping produce matches, I think it's a no-brainer. I think it's a slam dunk. With Rina Yamashita, yeah, she's the definition of cool, and she very much like Utami can work several different styles. Her and Utami just throwing down for 10, 12 minutes in the middle of Corkin Hall, I'm all for that. But that two great matches, my friend, two great matches. And considering, again, Jungle and Utami, yes, they wrestled a handful of times before. It's completely different with Tommy Hayashishita.
Oh, God, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm all for that, my man. Again, fingers crossed. We have been very good this year. However, Marigold has also been very good to us this year. So
that's true. Thank you again for the interview. Moving on then, the next question, and this was something, again, that I was really interested in. Question, many people see you as the ace of Marigold. How does that make you feel? Does that name come with a lot of pressure? And Utami says, of course I feel the pressure. I'm not the type of person who can handle pressure well, lol. But I think that the pressure is making me stronger. And I was really, the reason that I asked this was because what is the sort of percentages of being honored to be classed as the ace of Marigold, but also seeing as, you know, you are the person around which this company is being built. And what does that do to a person? You know, are you able to go out into the ring with the same sort of freedom when a lot of people view you as the centerpiece of this promotion, especially at the start? You can argue now that even though Utami is undoubtedly the biggest star in this company still, you know, Mirai has been elevated. Miko Aono has been elevated. Again, we mentioned Natsumi Shozuki has been elevated. And they are in the process of elevating Koki Amore. So the pressure may not be there as it was earlier in the day. But I'm intrigued to know sort of how that affects a wrestler. And she says the pressure is making me stronger, but she does acknowledge it is a pressure position to be in, of course.
It's weird because you don't see it.
No, you don't at all.
She's the coolest cat in the room. She's the coolest cat in the room. Maybe it's the pressure. Maybe that's what's driving her to be better. Maybe there is so much pressure that as soon as her music hits and she cuts that curtain, she's Utami Hayashishita, the best wrestlers in the world, regardless of country or gender. So maybe that's what it is. It's like, yeah, I do feel pressure, and that's what pushes me to do better. So, yeah, that was a really great answer because we've never seen it. We've been covering every single one of her matches since 2021. And it's like, I don't see it. I'm like, oh, maybe that's the whole reason why she's that. Maybe it's the pressure that drives her to be the absolute best. So that was a really great answer.
Well, they say, don't they, that pressure makes diamonds out of coal. So, yes, you know, some people thrive under pressure. Some people go to pieces under pressure. If Utami is acknowledging the fact that she's not the person who can handle pressure well, if this is Utami not handling pressure well, I genuinely fear anyone stepping in the ring with her when she does handle pressure. Because, she has been absolutely tremendous this year. Looking ahead to 2025, you're already guaranteed a match for the Marigold World Championship at Ota Ward City Gymnasium. How excited are you for this match, and what else would you like 2025 to have in store for you and for Marigold? And Utami says, I think this is an important match for Utami Hayashishita's big comeback. I think this match is very important not only for Utami Hayashishita, but also for the future of Marigold's ace. Now, there's a couple of things that I really liked about this answer. One, the separation between Utami and Marigold's ace. It's an important match for me personally and my comeback and, you know, my sort of surge to being at the top of Marigold, but also for the future of this, you know, this sort of concept of Marigold's ace. And I thought that was quite an in-depth answer, really, the fact that she is able to separate the fact that I am Utami. And that is its own separate thing to being the ace of Marigold, Matt.
Not only that, but this match is taking place on January 3rd.
It is.
And again, we think it's going to be Utami versus Sari, which is another dream. And I throw that out there all the time, and I will continue. That is another dream match. And very much like we see what always happens on January 4th with New Japan, especially what they were able to do from 2012 until COVID 2020, is usually January 4th, in the Tokyo Dome, the first week of the new year, you have your match, the match that everybody's chasing for the entire year. Every promotion, like what's going to be the best match, whether it's Tanahashi Okada, Okada Omega, Omega Tanahashi, so on and so forth. Where this is not, you know, not only is it an important match for Utami, but it's an important match that there's a good chance that this one's going to be one of the best matches of the year on day three of the year that everybody's going to be chasing, not just in Marigold. Stardom, New Japan, All Japan, Tokyo Joshi Pro, WWE. This might be the match that we're like 6 months into the year and be like, hey man, there's some really great stuff, but so far the best match I've seen in 2025. I still go back to the 3rd of January. So it's an important match for Utami. It's an important match for Marigold because that's a match they can hang their hat on, very much like they did Stardom did back in 2021 with that match with Shuri that everybody was trying to chase. And I think this is going to be one that everybody, again, in the company, outside the company, is going to try to chase because it's going to set the bar for what we're going to see in professional wrestling in 2025. Because we still got 6 weeks left this year, buddy. And boy, howdy, we've seen some great, great wrestling. Great wrestling. So, yeah, really excited for this one and really excited to see how high the bar is going to be set. Because, you know, Sari and Utami Hayashishita, two of the best wrestlers in the world, with this buildup for the big championship on the 3rd of January in a big show. I mean, it's literally the perfect storm. Hopefully we just don't see it in a snowstorm, my friend.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, sort of final bit on this before we move on to the final question with Utami. Obviously, I think we're assuming that whoever is champion going into First Dream, whether it is Sari, as we all predict, or whether it's Nanae, I think everyone assumes that Utami is going to be taking that belt at First Dream. And what's going to be really interesting is how the dynamic changes in Marigold between a champion that's only there for some of the time, like Sari, because she's a freelancer, and someone who's at the promotion full-time with that red belt like Utami. I'm really intrigued to see how that dynamic changes. We'll get on to this final question because I know Matt is currently waiting on about 15 different podcasts that he's doing today. So we'll
only one more. I already text Heather and he told me don't worry about it. He's watching Sui Poivre's Teclan Momo Watanabe. So he's got good company.
Absolutely. So final question. You know the question that we asked. It's the question we ask with every interview. You've been in the ring with some of the hardest strikers in Joshi, Mayu Iwatani, Siori, Momo Watanabe, just to name a few. But in your opinion, who do you think hits the hardest? Now, I personally, when we first asked this, thought this was a case of who hits harder. Like one person who hits harder. Utami disagrees. They all have different kinds of strength. Mayu Iwatani had sharp kicks, Momo Watanabe had heavy kicks, and Siori had kicks that resonated to the core. I think Siori's kicks were what hit me the hardest, but I think what I struggled with the most were Mayu Iwatani's kicks, which were so fast you couldn't even see them. And genuinely, I didn't think about the different difficulties of facing these three women. Like, obviously, I think everyone appreciates Shuri's kicks. You know, probably no one more than Natsupoi, who seems to be booted around the ring like a football every time she's faced with Shuri.
She's on a slip and slide.
Absolutely.
How's that even possible?
I don't think anyone sells them better than Natsupoi either. But obviously, everyone knows that they're hard. You can tell that Momo Watanabe's are dull, heavy kicks. But those sharp kicks from Mayu, that speed, you don't really think about how difficult it is to defend yourself against something that fast. And I thought this was a really interesting answer because she doesn't actually say, you know, such and such is the hardest. Instead, she says these three are incredibly difficult to face because of A, B, and C. I don't know what I'd rather face, a sharp kick and a quick kick, a heavy kick, or a kick that, and I quote, resonates to the core.
I've always said, because like Momo and Shuri are probably like my two favorite strikers, maybe in all of wrestling. And Shuri hits like the combination, right? She'll do the kick, the knee, like her kicks, her single kicks are hard. Momo, it's like one kick and you're done. It's like getting hit with a tree. It's like that one, like that Mike Tyson uppercut. Like, you're done. For Shuri, her one kick is really hard. But I think Momo, because he said Momo has the heavier kicks. And I think Momo trains out of Shooter Box. And there's a very good, great kickboxing gym over there in Japan. The Mayu one was very interesting because it was like, yeah, Mayu does throw those quick strikes. She does. But yeah, it just always seems like Momo, if you're asking me which one I'd want to be hit by, maybe Momo, just because it's one and done. We're sure it's a combination of Mayu, you just see. Like, I would rather just get hit with it and call and be down and call it a day.
Just,
yeah, that's it. I'm good. I'm good with the one. Yeah, I'm good with the one. I mean, they're all and again, we ask a lot of the Joshi wrestlers and a lot of the wrestlers that have, you know, the American wrestlers and the English wrestlers that have come over to Japan, who hits the hardest. And a lot of people do go with Mayu, but a lot of people lately, Rob, have been giving us more than one answer. So sometimes it's just like, you know, it's just like, who's your favorite, you know, who you think's the best wrestler this year? It's tough to give one answer. Who's your favorite wrestler in this year or, you know, and this decade? It's tough to give one answer. So it's like, when you're a Utami and you have all these great matches, epic matches, you know, I just all had red belt matches against all three of these wrestlers that we talked about, and all of that big main event matches that drew money. I mean, maybe there's not one answer, but again, she breaks it down. Mayu has the sharp kicks. Momo definitely kicks the heaviest, and you can hear that big when she hits, and where Shuri's just like with the combinations where it's just like shakes you to her core. But I think Shuri's kicks hit me the hardest because they've had, I think, more time in the ring together, you know, across the ring together than Utami versus Mayu and Utami versus Momo. So maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. But again, we love that question. Again, we've gotten all sorts of great answers from different wrestlers. And it's really interesting to see because we watch and we're like, oh, and for somebody that I love that hard hitting style. And I always tell people, like, I'm going to hit you hard. Make sure you hit me harder first, so this way I can kind of range where I'm going to hit you. And for somebody that's been knocked out not once but twice in the same match with the Necro Butcher, I appreciate hard hitting professional wrestling.
Yes, having shaken hands with the Necro Butcher, I can appreciate just how easy it is to get knocked out by the bloke.
I remember when we bumped into him at WrestleCon, and I was talking, like, who's that? I said, it's a Necro Butcher. And he went and shook his hand, and I go, do you feel how big his hand is? I said, yeah, imagine that coming at you so many times, like 100 miles an hour. I said his hand wasn't even the hardest thing. It was the headbutt. The headbutt was even worse than the hand. This is like, where am I? I just woke up twice in one match. And he was so nice. You okay, buddy? With the gushing blood.
It's like shaking hands with Hagrid. He was massive. Like, his hand was like that. He engulfed my entire arm. He's up to my elbow.
Where'd you go, Rob? I lost my arm.
It's just lost in the handshake. I do love Utami's answer. However, my favorite answer to this question is still Natsumi Shozuki, who basically went, me. I hit the hardest. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. That self-positive phrase, I love that. But that does bring us to the end of the Utami interview. I want to first shout out, obviously, Marigold for letting us do this. Sonny Gutierrez, friend of the show, thank you so much for setting that up. We massively, massively appreciate you and everything that you do for us. Utami as well, who is incredibly busy. Every time I turn on social media, she's done an interview with someone else. So the fact that she's able to squeeze us in, we massively appreciate that as well. Thank you so much. And the best of luck for First stream, obviously. None of this, however, is possible without Chiaco Asakura, who, brilliant friend of the show, fantastic person, does all the translation work for us and literally just asks for a shout out. You know, she is the absolute best. Go and check her out on Twitter at @Chiaco_Asakura. She really is the absolute best. So thank you, Chiaco, as well. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you to you as well for joining us on this commentary of Utami's interview. We hope that you have enjoyed it as much as we did reading some of the answers to those questions. Don't forget that you can check out the full transcript of this at talkjoshi.com. Doesn't matter if you put the Stormcast in, because it will just forward you to Talk Joshi anyway. So talkjoshi.com. In fans on all social media at either the Stardom Cast, Marigold Podcast, or Talk Joshi. All of the links are below in the podcast description or the video description, however you've chosen to digest this interview. Don't forget you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/thestardomcast, as well for all these episodes early and ad-free. Matt Turner, have a lovely time in Dallas. And we shall see you when you get back, where you will be able to regale us with what country metal rap band came to serenade you.
Cowboys from Hell. Cowboys from Hell. Cowboys from Hell. You know, it's really weird because I was telling you, I said it's a quick meeting. It's just basically the higher up saying, enjoy yourselves. Here's what to do. Here's what not to do. But for some reason, always like on day one, like my direct boss will be like, everybody have a good time. Behave yourself. And he'll always point to me. I'm like, me behave myself. Me.
Don't forget, I've been to Philadelphia with you. I know what he means.
However, I always say day two, because it's a lot of drinking going on, right? And again, I like a drink here and there, but I my whole thing is I like to get to bed early because I'm up early. I always say on day two or day three of these things, who's the only one at the gym at 5 in the morning out of 800 people in this hotel? This guy. So there you go. But anywho, folks. Questions, comments, anything you need from me, Matt Turner OF on the Instagram and or the Twitter is the best way to get a hold of me. If you want to shoot me an email, the email address is thestardomcast22@gmail.com. Folks, we greatly appreciate your support. And again, million thanks to Marigold, especially Sonny. Greatly appreciate you, my friend, and hope to have you back on this show sooner than later. Like I always say, folks, it's just not my podcast. It's our podcast. Because we're all together and everyone's different. Everyone's special.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.